eating disease. In fact, fasting can be considered the cornerstone of natural healing, and its value without equal. How long should one fast becomes important, since long fast of 30 to 50 days could become dangerous unless properly conducted and supervised by a knowledgeable authority. It is therefore wisest for the faster to adopt a series of short fasts, i.e., 2 or 3 days of each week, gradually increasing the length of each succeeding fast, a day or more if necessary, but not to exceed more than a week of total fast at one time. This will enable the chronically ill body to gradually and slowly eliminate these toxic waste materials responsible for their illness without seriously affecting normal body functioning, after which a corrected mode of living will restore the individual to a vital, vigorous state of health. Fasting for overcoming both acute and chronic ailments is centuries old, dating back to the beginning of life itself. No claim is made that fasting is necessarily a pleasant experience, yet the faster often receives blessed relief from physical pain, plus self-satisfaction in the knowledge that the fast might eventually result in complete cessation of all pain, and hopefully a return to normalcy. Primarily, a fast is undertaken for a good reason. The individual is desirous of correcting and overcoming illness, or a depleted loss of vital power, which has already manifested itself, threatens to become chronic. So the answer to how long should one fast becomes clear, i.e., continue the short fast until the illness has been overcome and disease no longer exists. This suggestion, of course, refers directly to the length of time that the series of shorter fasts, as previously outlined, are to be continued. Why to fast? The search for health goes on unceasingly, and while fasting has helped untold thousands of sufferers to regain normal health, it is essential that we must know when, how, and why to fast in order that we might receive the greater amount of physical and mental benefit. Arnold Arendt in his Mucusless Diet Healing System tells us, every disease, no matter what name it may be known by in medical science, is constipation, a clogging up of the entire pipe system of the human body. Please note that Arendt uses the word constipation to apply to a clogging up, a constipation of the entire human pipe system, and not merely a bowel evacuation, the ordinarily accepted usage of the word. He refers specifically to the accumulation of waste toxic matters in the tissues and in the bloodstream, the lungs, kidneys, bladder, stomach, intestinal tract, in fact, every organ of the entire body. And since, in Arendt's opinion, 99.9% of all ailments directly result from the same causes, he aptly refers to all common ailments as the oneness of disease. Hence, the method of correction of the common cold, bronchitis, asthma, sinusitis, or tuberculosis can be best accomplished through fasting, since in his opinion, all ailments are the direct result of a clogged up, overloaded mucus condition brought about through wrong dietetic habits, i.e., the overeating of mucus-forming types of food. The simple remedial expedient is to discontinue doing that which was the original cause of the condition. Fast, and thereby give nature an opportunity to eliminate these toxic waste matters, which Arendt calls mucus. High blood pressure, migraine or other types of headaches, cardiac conditions or peptic ulcers, colitis, rickets, anemia, neutritis or acidosis, epilepsy, glaucoma, urinary disturbances of the bladder, nephritis, tumors, or even sterility, to name but just a few, according to Arendt's teachings, consist of an overloaded mucus condition existing throughout the entire body, directly traceable to the one great dietetic sin, gluttonous overeating of incorrect food mixtures. Arendt's claim that 99.9% of all ailments actually result from the one cause, wrong food combinations and gluttony, remains unshaken. forcing ourselves to eat when no appetite exists because of the prevalent and popular belief that we must eat to gain strength and vitality can result in the temporary loss of all desire for food of any kind. And unfortunately, the results of this forced eating of plenty of good nourishing foods may actually produce an entirely opposite result. We end up building disease rather than gaining vitality, and oftentimes permanent illness is the net result. All of which teaches us that strength, vitality, and good health are by no means dependent upon the quantity of our food intake, but rather through the actual amount of properly digested and assimilated food eaten that can be used by the body. Fasting can start you on the road to the fulfillment of an enjoyable, pleasant, happy way of life. And the end result of following a natural method of eating and living is a longer, healthful life. These are but a few why to fast reasons. Chapter 16. When and How to Fast. Dr. Frank McCoy, in his book, The Fast Way to Health, recounts hundreds of cases who were greatly helped through an exclusive liquid diet consisting of nothing but fresh orange juice. The patient reported to Dr. McCoy's office daily for periods from 3 to 6 weeks. Besides the orange juice diet, other modalities such as massage, vibrating machines, colonic irrigations, and chiropractic adjustments were also used in the treatment to help keep the patient occupied. But Dr. McCoy gives full credit to the fast. Bernard McFadden, the well-known physical culturist, received much publicity through advocating an exclusive milk diet, and thousands of persons claim to have received great benefits from this diet. Both modalities, the fresh orange juice and the milk diet, come under the category of what could be called a camouflaged fast. In other words, the body is permitted to rest and rebuild since the one type of food only requires considerably less vitality to digest. The overworked organs are thus given an opportunity to slow down, thereby strengthening the patient's vitality. Unused morbid waste encumbrances are eliminated, and the previously overworked body can now carry on the normal digestive process. An exclusive milk diet can cause constipation and for this reason has proven undesirable. The fresh orange juice diet, if used by a patient heavily encumbered with concentrated poisons, could cause these concentrated poisons to be released into the bloodstream too rapidly, and in fact it might even be conceivable, without proper supervision, this condition could end disastrously. To attempt a long fast and at the same time continue to carry on our daily chores of work as usual is not entirely fair to the faster since, after all, we must not overlook the fact that during the fast we are actually on nature's operating table. A considerable amount of bodily vitality is consumed during the process of throwing off these age-old poisons and toxic waste materials and justifiably a complete rest. Even to the point of remaining in bed during the entire period of the fast is often indicated. In other words, a complete physical rest and mental relaxation should be the rule, if at all possible, during such strenuous house-cleansing periods. The form of fasting known as a liquid diet, especially if the liquid consists of fresh fruit or vegetable juices, or cooked vegetable broth, celery, carrots, parsley, onions, tomatoes, etc., can be continued a month or more without overtaxing the patient's vital forces. But when fresh grapes, orange, or grapefruit juice is used exclusively, considerably more caution must be the rule, since these particular juices bring extremely aggressive, have a decidedly potent ability to stir up toxic waste. Thrown into the blood circulation too rapidly, especially after a long total fast when the eliminated poisons are in concentrated form, the bloodstream becomes overloaded, and normal bodily functioning is seriously disarranged. Dizzy spells might occur, followed by severe diarrhea and vomiting. And while this could be only temporary, it should require careful observation and attention. In case this physical reaction persists, it is advisable and imperative to discontinue the fast immediately and a diet of cooked vegetables containing much roughage, such as celery, carrots, cabbage, squash, spinach, beets, sauerkraut, etc., or even meats, particularly if the patient has been a one-sided meat eater, temporarily at least until the body functioning returns to normal and all symptoms of dizziness have completely disappeared. When cooked or all baked types of fruits and vegetables, including the fresh frozen fruits and vegetables, are much less aggressive as far as their eliminating ability is concerned. Now, you may appreciate why it is so necessary that you take into consideration the amount of existing waste and poisonous toxic matters in your body before undertaking a long fast. Even the innocent appearing of soothing syrups given to infants contain some form of narcotics in minute dosage. Hence, the extreme importance of having complete knowledge before suggesting a long fast is so essential in more ways than one. We need only to look to the animal world to learn the importance that wise Mother Nature places in fasting. All sick, seriously ill, or wounded animals immediately discontinue eating food and go on a total fast in a secluded place where they can relax from all activity until they have completely regained their health and vigor. This could require a period off time as long as a week or even a month, but their practice is always rewarded with success. Complete fasting without food or water of a number of animals during their long winter hibernation is a well-known phenomenon, and it is even customary for many animals to fast during the nursing period, remaining with their young until weaned. Fasting must be recognized as a natural and safe method of care of the sick body, a method by which the person is enabled to overcome illness through eliminating, almost miraculously, the cause of the ailment, and yet it can be said that there is nothing miraculous about it. Whether we fast to restore health, gain or lose weight, or merely to retain our present bodily vigor, we soon realize that fasting is a vital factor through which we may increase our vitality and personal well-being, both mentally and physically. Besides readily overcoming such minor discomforts as the common cold or indigestion, fasting undoubtedly adds to your lifespan. The digestive process uses up precious vitality. Contrariwise, fasting has been known to actually rebuild vital forces, and the conclusion must become self-evident that fasting prolongs life itself. It is necessary, therefore, that we repeat over and over again the importance of entering upon a fast intelligently, confident in the final outcome, with complete understanding and knowledge, and we specifically refer to the longer fasts. It is essential, for example, that the faster knows the difference between false and real appetite. Hunger pains caused through false appetite can generate rather severe pains in the stomach region, together with various emotional disturbances and a corresponding feeling of weakness. Since the eating of food will at this period immediately cause stoppage of the distress symptoms, it is only natural for the faster to surmise that lack of food was the cause, and eating the remedy, whereas the opposite might be true. Our established lifelong habit of eating by the clock has firmly affixed in our minds the desirability of eating at that precise time. The fact of the matter is that true hunger can only take place when a real need for food exists. The individual who is always hungry is, in fact, pathologically unwell. Surely no need for food exists when hunger is lacking. Never force yourself to eat unless you are truly hungry and a keen relish for food exists. Otherwise, you merely add work to an already overworked digestive tract. All excess food becomes a burden, and this, of course, is especially true in case of illness. Overeating or forced feeding retards recovery by requiring the body to use its precious vitality in the elimination of this unneeded food. Often this so-called good nourishing diet is actually to blame for the patient's loss of weight and lessened vitality. Even in the healthy body, when overeating or gluttony is indulged in, it can cause vomiting and diarrhea, for the healthy organ rejects all excess food. Contrariwise, when the quantity of food intake is decreased, lessened, bodily energy is conserved since the digestive organs have less work to do. Liver, pancreas, heart, and arteries are relieved of a greater portion of their labor, all of which naturally results in an increase of the healing process. Withholding all food intake from the sick patient causes every depurating organ in the entire body to increase its eliminating activity. It starts immediately to get rid of all poisonous wastes, and a cleansing of the entire tissue system begins. Nothing equals the fast as a means of eliminating age-old stored-up waste for an overloaded tissue system. Nature's constant and unceasing effort, therefore, is to remove all unusable and excess waste substances from the body, and fortunately for us, this constant elimination goes on continuously, and good health is the result. To be willing to settle for half health or less, when real health is possible, is to rob yourself of life's most precious possession. Aristotle, that great Greek philosopher, said over 2,300 years ago, "If there is one way better than another, it is the way of nature." Much vital energy is required during this cleansing process, but paradoxical as it might seem, the faster usually gains both in strength and weight. The feverish patient already lacks the necessary vitality to digest food while suffering pain, yet nourishing food continues to be advised. Unfortunately, the popular idea that man must eat every few hours in order to stay alive remains, despite the fact that it has been proven over and over again that the sick person actually gains in strength when food is withheld and suffers a relapse from forced feeding. How many thousands of patients have been innocently fed into premature graves through ignorance of nature's laws? No claim is herein made that fasting alone, regardless of the advanced stage of the illness or bodily and mental condition of the patient, will produce the sure cure. Common sense and caution must be your guide during the fast, and we can safely predict that in the majority of cases, the faster will become physically stronger and more vital and mentally alert, up to the point, of course, that the individual is capable of accepting. Unfortunately, fasting, when used in far advanced cases as a last resort or in long-standing chronic cases, especially in the elderly person of lowered vitality, cannot be expected to produce the miracle. Terminal cases, for example, can only hope for a lessening of the discomfort of their pain. Total fasting is not indicated in these terminal cases, but worthwhile results, merely through reducing the quantity of food intake, are often experienced. An extremely limited, carefully selected diet in all cases should be carried on. And, remember, overfeeding can only result in increased suffering. Dr. J. H. Tilden, M.D., conducted thousands of fasts in his Denver sanitarium and authored many books on the subject of fasting. He wrote, "I must say in all seriousness that fasting, when combined with a properly selected diet, is the nearest approach to a cure-all that is possible to conceive, profoundly simple and simply profound. Without exception, all of the modern miracle drugs, including aspirin drugs employed today to restore the sick and ailing to normal health, have been known to result in great bodily harm. It is well known and readily acknowledged that they act as a palliative and not a cure, yet often the ill effects they cause are not discovered until many years after taking, before reactions occur in the affected organ and are recognized. When the cause of illness is finally removed and the restorative process of true healing is given the opportunity to function, nature's remarkable rebuilding process takes place and proceeds in an orderly manner in accordance with natural physiological law. Wounds are healed, broken bones are mended, destroyed tissues are replaced, and we can positively state that these healing processes have never been duplicated through any method or laboratory finding as yet devised by mere man. It is true that the scientist has kept living tissue alive and growing in his laboratory, but he has never been able to reproduce living tissue, nor has he developed a man-made substitute for the natural life process through which healing is accomplished. Nature's healing process starts instantly when the need occurs, and we must recognize the importance of aiding nature through fasting, since we now know that the healing process increases when the body is freed from disposing of surplus food. Only a total abstinence from food makes it possible for the sick body to function thoroughly, in its own innumerable way, during the healing period. As previously mentioned, Arnold Arendt preferred the so-called short fast of 3 days a week, or 10 days for the average individual. It was his experience that satisfactory results could be obtained through a series of so-called shorter fasts, especially in cases where the patient is not under competent supervision and on his own, so to speak. It is well for the individual to decide on how long he intends to carry on before initiating the fast. Let us say, for example, that the patient is of the nervous, high-strung, or imaginative type, or he may even be skeptical of results that might occur. He must first of all create an enthusiastic desire to fast. If the slightest doubt of final success is permitted to enter his mind, then not more than 2 or 3 days should be the extent of the fast in this case. Hopefully the resulting good feeling will quiet all future unnecessary fears, and the next fast can be for a longer period, even up to a full week. The overweight individual finds it much easier to go without food. Loss of weight causes no fear, and the patient's mental attitude makes fasting almost a pleasure. A week or perhaps 10 days for this type of individual brings practically no discomfort whatsoever. The first day's hunger pangs perhaps are the most difficult. A mouthful of water, held for 10 or 15 minutes before expectorating, will lessen the false appetite craving for food, which decreases as the fast progresses. The seriously sick or severely injured individual has absolutely no desire for food, so fasting comes naturally. A safe rule to follow is to stop eating until appetite has returned, or until you feel completely well. Chapter 17, Summary. When to Fast. Nature has selected the spring of the year for the annual house-cleaning period. The very types of the first green-leaf vegetables and fruits that nature brings forth and amply supplies in the early spring give significant testimony to this fact. The green-leaf vegetables and herbs are proven blood purifiers, well known over the centuries, and because of their laxative qualities, they are recognized efficient cleansers. This same description applies as well to the first fruits of the season. Cherries, for example, one of the earlier fruits to ripen, have long been recognized for their cleansing ability. Their enticing color appeal, plus the sweet and delicious flavor, particularly when gathered and eaten direct from the tree, will produce remarkable blood purifying and cleansing results. An exclusive cherry diet for 5 or 6 days is a camouflaged fast well worth trying. Since the body's resistance to cold weather is lowered during the fast, it is more pleasant to fast during the warmer weather, but this is not to say that we should wait until warm weather returns before undertaking a fast if the need for fasting exists. Postponing the fast, awaiting warmer weather, could prove inadvisable, for a delay might conceivably result in the ailment becoming more involved. It is very easy for the patient to remain indoors while fasting and remain comfortable during the coldest weather. Why to fast? Fasting is indicated in many instances. At the first indication of the common cold, for example, fasting becomes a preventative measure. Start the cleansing, fasting program before a more serious, chronic condition develops. Minor ailments such as headaches, bilelessness, nervousness, injuries, and even excessive grief all indicate the desirability of missing a meal or two. The length of time must, of course, depend entirely on the condition of the faster. For more serious ailments, the amount of toxic waste and foreign encumbrances present in the bloodstream must be taken into consideration, and often a longer fast is indicated. Age of the faster is another important factor, since we cannot expect to overcome the effects of a lifetime of wrong living within a few short days or weeks. The chronic sufferer, therefore, must exercise patience and perseverance in his efforts to return to normal health. It is to be expected that in many instances the faster becomes discouraged, even frightened, at the actual results that the fast brings about during the early stages of the house cleaning period. But with complete faith and knowledge of what is actually occurring, the final results will eventually prove very worthwhile. A little self-discipline would provide many of us with a steady flow of energy and a wonderful sense of inner well-being that comes from a healthy body. Where to fast? Oftentimes, where to fast must be given a great deal of consideration. The inevitable opposition of the well-meaning members of the family often proves to be the most difficult of the obstacles to overcome. Our loved ones, because of the inborn fear of starvation inoculated in all of us since early childhood, find it impossible to withhold well-intentioned warnings and often plead tearfully with the faster to eat something. They honestly and sincerely believe that great bodily harm, even death itself, will inevitably result from a fast of more than a few days at most. Their pleadings, when ignored, often lead to hysterical and angry efforts to force the faster to eat some good, nourishing food. And the unfortunate sick person, already weakened through illness, loses his original determination to get well or else, and succumbs to their pleadings by eating something, which often are the very foods that should not be used. It may well be that the faster himself is not completely sold to the efficacy of the fast, in which case he can be more easily swayed from his original plan to continue the fast, since he lacks the courage of his own convictions. Should this experience be yours, then at least eat the foods that you know are indicated for breaking the fast as taught by Professor Arnold Arendt, in order to accomplish the most good. It might be wise under these conditions to arrange for suitable supervision at a sanatorium or rest home, specializing in fasting, particularly if the faster contemplates a longer fast of 2 or 3 weeks' duration. Never lose sight of the fact that the faster is on nature's bloodless operating table, and should, therefore, be made comfortable at all times through adequate nursing care, daily sponge baths, massage, colonic irrigations, with complete rest and relaxation, so that the bodily strength and comfort can be retained and even increased. To obey nature's laws means health. To disregard, whether through ignorance or deliberately, means pain, disease, and even death. In other words, health is not merely an accident, but an achievement. For the orderly working of the body function spells health, and its derangement results in disease. The warning signs of pain and discomfort signify that nature's laws have been digressed, whether unintentionally or not. Freedom from pain, or health, means that they have been complied with. In the overwhelming majority of illness, all that nature requires for health to be gained is a discontinuance from doing that which was the original cause of the disease. Yet, our natural instinct to fast, even missing a single meal, has become lost through present-day civilization. And the increase of all human ills can be directly traced to the accepted customs of our advanced civilization. How long to fast? The exact length of the fast need not be definitely decided beforehand. The various physical and mental reactions which take place during the fast could understandably often cause needless alarm, both to the faster and the inexperienced physician. For the first time in years, possibly for the first time in the life of the faster, a thorough cleansing of the tissue system is possible, and stored up toxemic waste and poisons are now being carried off as the avenues of circulation contract, permitting the existing overpressure to be rapidly relieved. Renewed vitality enables the bloodstream to discharge the dissolved mucus and toxemic waste materials now in circulation for elimination, and these poisonous encumbrances might cause a feeling of being ill to exist during this period. You will find, however, that just as soon as the cleansing process is completed and the waste are eliminated, the faster feels stronger than ever before. Eret often remarked about his fasting patients actually feeling stronger on the third week of the fast than they did during the first week. The unobstructed blood circulation can now produce increased vitality, further proof that nature heals through fasting. It is this elimination of waste, poisonous materials with which the tissues and intestinal tract have been clogged up for years and now finally removed, that make it possible for normal bodily function to once again take place. It is nature alone, in the final analysis, through fasting and the resulting elimination of waste materials through the various depurating organs, i.e. the skin, kidneys, lungs, bowels, as well as our eyes, ears, and nose, that aid the true healing process to take place. The mills of the gods grind slowly, yet they grind exceedingly fine. In the final summation, we cannot emphasize too strongly the fact that what we know as disease is in reality a process of purification, a special effort, as it were, on the part of the abused, sick organism to throw off the abnormal quantities of latent poisonous waste materials. Our perverted dietetic habits, the result of false teaching since childhood, are the origin. We attempt to stop the pain through unnatural means rather than recognize pain as nature's warning signal of a local symptom of a general disorder. The majority of persons, never having experienced the feeling of real health and vitality, are not cognizant of what they are missing. They little suspect that mankind's greatest enemies, ignorance, selfishness, greed, and gluttony, the cause of all his physical and mental woes, exist within himself. Discontinue careless and indulgent overeating. Comply with nature's unchangeable laws for safe guidance in your search for health. Fasting gives the body an opportunity to correct these faults of improper dieting and incompatible food combinations. To enjoy this more abundant, healthier life is within your reach. The sooner you make the decision to start, the better off you surely will be. Why not grasp this opportunity and let us help you attain your desired goal of a longer, happier, healthier, more vigorous life? Become a disciple of health and prove to yourself that strict self-discipline brings worthwhile results. Then, through precept and example, hold high the torch of knowledge and enlightenment to your fellow man, who, while teetering on the very brink of physical and mental collapse, finds himself still unable to grasp these simple truths, nor understand the cause of his suffering. Make him anxious to travel the broad road to health, leading to a completely new, wonderful, joyous life of physical, spiritual, and mental regeneration. This has been Rational Fasting by Arnold Eret, narrated by John Riddle. Copyright 2018, BN Publishing, online at bnpublishing.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.